Good morning, members. I'm Sivuile Mazanzi. I'm from PMG, Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning, Chair and members. Peter Nkabinda, PLO Minister.
Financial year. It's still a preliminary report because we just got a month after the conclusion of the quarter. The outline of the presentation is there. We'll look at the mandate of the department, the approved budget, program structure, the financial performance, the quarter four, the preliminary performance information for quarter four, the overall performance against set targets per program, the two programs, and then the human resource performance, and then the conclusion. Chair, if I just rush through some of the preliminary, the mandate of the Act, of the Department derived from the Act, then the approved program structure, we've got three programs, administration, social and economic support, and ESM. Empowerment and stakeholder management, and the first program administration dealing with management, corporate services, financial administration, internal audit, strategic planning and office accommodation. Second program, CES, dealing with the database, health care and well-being services, and socio-economic support management. Most of the benefits are in socioeconomic support, including healthcare, education, the SRD that we're paying at the moment, compensation for injuries, and then the database is also falling under SRD, and then housing as well. And then empowerment stakeholder management, which deals with provincial offices and stakeholder relations, which includes SANVA, the Advisory Council, the Appeal Board, then empowerment and skills development, and heritage, memorialization, burials, and honoring military veterans. If we then go to the next slide on the financial performance. If we look at the executive summary, overall the DMV spend at the closure of the quarter was 600.7 million against the allocation of 622.1 million, which results in an underspend of 21.4 million and a percentage spend for the year of 97%. Chair, that's a significant improvement on the last 2 years. The year, 2 years before, we had got expenditure of 59%. And last year it was 85%, so we pushed it up to 97%. The cost of employment was ahead of budget by 2%, mainly due to imbalances in the organogram of DMV. Because of the problems of the structure, we've had to employ contractors and interns. future service delivery, particularly in the two branches, SES and ESM. We sought approval from Treasury to lift the COE ceiling to 4 million. We then had, once that was approved, we then had an under expenditure in the budget of 1.6 million after year. There was underspend on office accommodation due to the inability of DMV to procure provincial offices. We're making slow progress, but some progress in the securing of the offices. Still have some problems in other provinces where we haven't yet got the offices, and then also some issues internally on ensuring that as we get the offices, all the support services, the IT, cleaners, etc. are in place. There was a in SES, socioeconomic support, there was an overall underspend, but there was a huge cost pressure still on education support, and we shifted funds from underperforming programs like housing and youth development to cover the cost pressure on education support. The deviation on the payment of 30-day payment of legitimate invoices, it was 24%, which is due to us catching up and trying to deal with the outstanding invoices of travel, cell phones, and pizza invoices. We then go to the slide on spend versus budget and key benefits. We then look at compensation. The budget was 153 million. It's 133,000. Sorry, these are thousands. 133,000 and to spend. SOD, the budget was initially 24 million, but we shifted some more money there to SOD. So it's 26 million, and we spent 25.8 million, which is 99%. Education support, budget with the shifts was 230 million, and we basically spent 230 million, slightly over. Healthcare support, the budget was 55.9 million, and we spent 59.9 million. A lot of time was spent on processing invoices that we received at the end of last year from SAM. Housing support, the budget was 15.7 million and we spent 15.9 million. So basically, if you add up all the benefits in SES, the expenditure was on 100 million, sorry, 100%. And we overspent by like 30,000 in that budget. In ESM, skills development, budget was 22 million and we spent 21 million, 99%. Parcel control board, the last amount of 700,000 was sent to them. Barrel support, the budget was 11 million, we spent 9.7 million. So the overall performance of ESM is 94%, and if you add up all the benefits, basically the expenditure is 99%. If we look at the next slide, which is the spend versus budget by economic classification, we'll see that in administration, as explained earlier, we spent 94%, SES 100%, and ESM 90%. And then if we look at the economic classification, the cost of employees 99% spent, goods and services 94%, transfers and subsidies 99%, and payments for capital assets 46%, giving an overall of 97%. We'll go to the next slide, budget by branch versus economic classification, a graphical view. I think that just gives us some bar graphs on the previous slide. Then if we look at the quarter four preliminary performance information, the slide 13, program one, the representation of women at SMS level is on 48%, so underperformance by 2%. Of course, when you count the actual numbers, you're looking at, I think, one or two individuals. Performance percentage of targets achieved against those plans. We achieved 35% of the targets, which is a deviation of 65%. There were targets that were not achieved. Percentage of targets achieved against those planned on the approved impact improvement plan. We achieved 10%, so there's a 90% deviation. Communication strategy, activities implemented. The target was 75% for the quarter, and we achieved 60%, deviation of 15%. Continuing percentage of cases from the presidential hotline results, the target was 100%, we achieved 90% of deviation of 10%. We also, our employee who was dealing with the hotline passed away during last year, and we visited the process to replace them. Fully integrate the military veterans benefit management system. As you know, we've been here with Peter. We've discussed with you the project. The project was due for implementation in April. We've met with Peter last week. There are delays in the project. They're now talking about implementation in July. The main delay has been their ability to appoint resources to do the program of the project, which has now done only from the beginning of April. So there's now a commitment and a time frame which takes us to the end of July for the full rollout of the project and the initial implementation in the beginning of July and then testing. So, if we then go to look at the overall quarter four performance, you'll see that in administration there were 9 targets planned. We achieved 3. That's a 33% performance rating. It says there were 3 targets. We achieved 2. That's 57%. Yes, then there were 5 targets. We achieved 1. That's 20%. Total is 7 out of 17 targets, we achieved 6 at 35%. If we look per program, if we deal with administration, I think it's the same information that's summarized at the top achievement of 33%. Then we look in the detail on slide 15, the percentage of invoices paid within 30 days. Was 73% with a deviation of 27%, which is slightly less than the previous quarter, but I think we're dealing with more voices at the moment. Number of liberation struggle history research outputs. The target was 4 and the output was 4. Sorry, the target was 1 and the output was 4. The percentage of representation of persons with disability, the target was 2%, and the preliminary we've achieved that. Then we go to SET. On slide 17, the details. Number of military veterans with access to healthcare services. The target was 15,000 and we've overachieved that. We are 16,673. The number of military veterans provided with new houses, the target in this quarter was 500 and the output is 156. the deviation of 344. Veterans who are captured on the database, the target was 20% and the output was 40%. The deviation should then be 20% and not 40%. So, A number of bursaries provided for military veterans and their dependents. I think that target still requires finalization. There was no target for quarter four, but in effect a large number of the bursaries are provided in quarter four. But that will be reflected in this first quarter's report. Then we go to ESM. We go to slide 19. Number of private sector companies and all member states having agreements with DMV. The quarter target was 3 and the output was 9. The MOUs presented to Manco. Number of military veterans and their dependents provided with funding for skills development. The target was 900 and the output was 96, deviation of 804. Military veterans businesses provided with access to empowerment opportunities. The target was 110 and the output was 114, so we exceeded by 4. Percentage of burial claims paid within 30 days of receipt. The target was 100% and the outcome is 64%, so the deviation is 36%. And number of memorial sites, the target was 2 and 9 were delivered. We go to the HR performance on slide 21. Look at the vacancy rate. If we look in quarter four on the right there, the approved posts were 169. According to that structure, there were 44 vacancies with 125 filled posts, so the vacancy rate is 26%. If we look at transformation equity statistics, we see that the numbers are reflected there. 116 Africans, 3 colors, 1 Asian, and 5 whites employed in the department. And then in conclusion, to overcome the problems, we need teamwork and an appreciation of the strategic role of the department. Thank you, Jesse.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, of course we are now ready in the busy with the new plan and way ahead. I've just looked at the figures there. The percentage is good in terms of expenditure. Of course, that is by making a huge shift of money from housing and from the skills program to education support. Education support has basically taken most of the money as a benefit. And my concern still continues, although I have asked the department of how they're going to deal with the future bursary applications, which has now been reduced to 20,000 for new applicants. But the current status is up to 72,000 and also accommodating postgraduate students in the program. If we look at all of that and we look at then it takes a bulk of the money. And how is that being, of course, mitigated? What are the issues? How are we going to resolve that issue going ahead over the MTF? When education bursaries are normally long-term and medium-term, the shortest term would probably be the skills development program, which is your short courses.
But the others are all primary school education, high school education, a full degree of 4 years. So the challenge is, we look at the expenditure, yes, we're happy at 97%, but we're not happy of how it was spent because at the expense of other benefits. How is that balance going to be addressed? And I've got my concern is about that particular issue. The others also, I noted there the burials that we find. That's always about the number of burials. We want to know how many people were actually buried. And that is not reported just 100% or 90%. We want to know how many actual people were buried and not a percentage of it. The skills development program, as I said, the challenge was, of course, filling the vacancies. Now, we have allocated instead of 4,000 to 5,000 for the coming year now with the planning. So we see the performance has not been good at all. Is that situation already addressed in preparation for the new financial year? Because clearly at the end of the fourth quarter, as we can see, the performance was dismal and therefore money was shifted. So, and of course, we look at the targets, those indicators are also not very good. Target indicators are problematic, that it doesn't really achieve what it's supposed to achieve. And of course, the issue of the personnel, here we find again in the fourth quarter, we're standing at 125 out of the 169 posts with a vacancy of 40 of a vacancy of 26%. Now I'm asking the question, going ahead, looking at the new plan also, we're looking at 116, that is being the actual amount being given by Treasury, where the department says it is 133 in the annual performance plan. So at the end of the fourth quarter, we're standing at 125 actually. So how are these things prepared that all these things are so contradictory or actually doesn't speak to each other? And we find the problems within the departments where one is speaking about vacancies in a specific department, which I will speak to rather later, with the performance plan and then the effect on what is happening now and what is being planned going ahead. I think those are some of my concerns that I have at this stage. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Saus, Honorable Dambuza.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. And I would like to also accept, accept the report from the presentation from the acting teacher. Chairperson, I just want to check from this 1.4 million which has not been spent. Is going to be rolled over, or are you going to have on this amount? And then the other issue is the issue of skills development. I would propose that we need to be given the actual numbers of these people who have been provided with this program, and as well as the what type of skills that were provided. And so I think I'm also concerned about the housing program, because it's really, really a thorny issue. Those military veterans are really, really complaining about this benefit, that they are not getting enough necessary service. So I think something must be done, Chair, on this matter. And then on the vacancy rate, I wanted to check, because we understand that there are posts that have been filled, but I wanted to check if are there no strategic posts that have no are still lacking on this 44. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. If there is no more questions, I'll turn it over to you, FGDG. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to deal with some of the overall issues, and then I'll ask colleagues to deal with some of the detail. I think, colleagues, let me say that at an overall level, what we've managed to deal with is the problems around expenditure. which were real problems, and the inability of the department to spend money that was allocated, largely due to internal problems, okay, of a variety of kinds. Okay. So we had this situation with massive demand for benefits, but the money was available, but we were unable to spend the money. We've now largely overcome that by planning expenditure, shifting money around, trying to deal with some of the issues. But as Honourable SR's raising and other members are also raising, the problem is that we still haven't been able at the beginning of the year to outline how we'll spend the budget, set targets, and then spend according to that. And that's now an issue the department needs to deal with. Part of the reasoning for that problem is the wrong distribution of human resources in the department, and we're addressing that. We've had a meeting 2 weeks ago with National Treasury at DPSA, so we're engaging now on the proposed structure, service delivery models, and our hope is that also by around July, that we would have some finality on that issue. And that will make a big difference. Once we put people in the right places, it's going to make delivery much easier. And so until we finalize that, we're going to continue to have this problem of contractors, interns, etc., working in the department. But that is the solution, and we're on our way with that engagement. The issue of the numbers and the difference between what Treasury is saying and what the department says, I'll leave to the CFO and the CDG Corporate Services to answer on that issue. The say for me to say that the overall number, I don't think it is introduced. The question is the breakdown of numbers. The other issue besides dealing with the structure of the department is we're starting to deal with policy. We've made some progress with policy, but there's still work outstanding in that regard. Okay? But we've now got the education policy, but we need to immediately start adjusting the education policy to reflect decisions we've already consulted on at the beginning of the year, which will come into effect for the new academic year, next year's academic year. Okay? So the policy requires a few adjustments for that. But let me just correct, the 20,000 is for basic education. We've reduced the amount we pay, the maximum amount, from 42,000 to 20,000, only for basic education. And the reasoning for that is that if we were to continue with 42,000, we were getting even more of a budget. Secondly, we looked at the average expenditure in the previous year, and it was around 19,000. So we said if we put it at 20,000, it will help us with the budget, but it will also meet the average needs of students in basic education. There's still more work that we need to do together with Treasury and others around what the amount should be set at. And so we've left the maximum amount for higher education at 72,000 because that is a close to what we're spending on each beneficiary. Yeah, it's a bit more than close to what we're spending in higher education. We've engaged also with NSFI to look at how we can save costs to the department while still providing the same level of education, which is basically to shift all those beneficiaries that qualify in terms of the new policy for higher education, put them into the NSFUS system and get NSFUS to pay for them, reducing our expenditure on education support and then allowing us to target those who would not qualify in terms of the NSFUS criteria. with regard to the policy is some of the issues you were raising. We've already started our discussions on that, but we haven't finalized on the issue. Should DMV be supporting postgraduate education, for instance? It's something we've highlighted. We're going to be consulting on that in the coming year. Ms. Marula can add around that, but I think that gives you some overall picture around that. We're moving around the housing policy. We want to finalize that. We're moving also around the pension benefit, because in this financial year, we want to sort out all the arrangements, policies, procedures for that, so that we can roll it out next year, and also give us time to plead with Treasury for more money, because that's going to be an additional amount. Now, I think also as we finalize including the education policy for the coming year, we're going to have to look at what we're going to set as the real expenditure going forward on education, and whether we're going to then seek funding from Treasury according to that. So if we're spending like 230 million a year, but actually the budget is only 98 million or something, then we need to now regularize this with Treasury. But we had to take some initial steps with Treasury, one of which was to show that we can spend money, because they were basically not prepared to look at more money for the department whilst there was chronic under expenditure. So we kind of dealt with that. The other one area was the policy thing. I said around that, we also need to consult the policy with Treasury, and hopefully that will lead to them giving us more money in terms of education. I just wanted to say about housing. Housing is a major problem. Essentially, we are not doing what we should be doing with human settlements. We had at the beginning of last year given human settlements a list of 1421 military veterans who should be prioritized to get houses. We're somewhere around, I think the final number will be 200. Maybe slightly over 200, which is clearly not acceptable. And the main problem is that the National Department of Human Settlements with the provincial department is unable to allocate houses in housing projects to military veterans. As much as we've given them the list, as much as the list can be broken down by province, broken down by district, there's not an actual allocation of houses to military veterans. Also, some of the houses we've built have been illegally occupied, or they've built, they've been illegally occupied, and up until now we haven't been able to resolve those issues. Which also, to my mind, creates a situation in the provincial department that they're a bit loath to allocate houses for military veterans with the fear that they will also be illegally occupied. And that, let me say, is largely a political issue, which requires political intervention. It's a substantial problem. So what we're raising with the in the department, and we're looking at, are there other models of delivery of housing besides the absolute reliance on human settlements, and what if DMV require to use another model? In particular, we would need to manage such a process if we don't have capacity at the moment to do. So we would have to look at that. The branch went to a strategic session 2 weeks ago, and I think they've started to look at this issue, but it still needs to be processed internally around that. I think Mrs. Marshall can come in on the issue of how many people were buried. And then the questions that Honorable Dambuza raised also on the actual number of people provided with fuel. I think I've dealt with the housing issue and the vacancy rate. And then lastly, there remain strategic posts that are unfilled. We've advertised to the department all the vacant posts as far as I'm aware, which were advertised in March. But now it's a question of filling those posts. We filled a few posts, but the branches need in particular to be dealing with the chief director's positions, because they're crucial in the service delivery branch in particular sense, and the lack of capacity there. And as you heard me in the beginning, some of the strategic issues that need to be dealt with, especially policy and operational procedures, rely on having chief directors and directors to develop those and certain issues. So I'm hoping that we can go forward. There's still the deputy DG post in place, before. We've appointed Marola Asper, and we've seen in the last month already significant more capacity in the branch, but that post needs to be filled, and filling up such a post is a responsibility of the executive post.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Member, colleagues. On the issue of the actual burial, a report will be provided within 14 days depicting the names of people who were given burial support and the formation they come from and areas. On the issue of the actual type of skill provided for military veterans and their dependents, also that report will be forwarded within 14 days. Thank you very much.
I would request that, because we need to use that information during our
if you can make it available immediately, do it that it's available. Yeah, if it's available, just make it available immediately so that the honorable members should be able to make an informed debate there. Thank you very much. Any other day? Okay. Before, were you supposed to answer something?
Not to hear my voice. No, I can just respond on the issue around the rollover. Yes, we have submitted a request to rollover the fund from the 21.4 million. We've requested to rollover 16.1 million. The main reason of requesting less is that one is not allowed to rollover and spend budget on COE as well as on capital expenditure unless you can justify that they are capital projects underway. So hence we requested less.
Let's take it that the concerns that were raised by honorable members will be attended to going forward. You are now going to present to the committee the annual performance plan, what the committee will expect to hear from you. It's not management details. Your alignment with the national development plan. I reckon the National Development Plan covers a lot of frameworks that you should do under the National Plan. Within the government priorities, the framework, Millennium Development Goals. Now, those are areas of emphasis for this committee. And thank you very much, and over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I just check that members have copies of the presentation?
Yeah.
And I think we're going to project it that stuff.
Okay.
Then, Chair, if you look at the outline of the presentation, the strategic overview is that the legislative requirement, revision to legislation, the macro structure, the layout of the APC, the alignment of government outcomes and priorities, which is what you were stating, which includes the strategic priorities, executive priorities, contribution to NDP, NDFA, outcomes and the executive priority outcomes, and the FASA implementation plan at 3.5. Then we'll look at the financial allocations to the different programs, and then the core performance information. So if we look at the introduction, which is my slide 5, we've tried to align the APT to the National Treasury Framework plan for the APT, and also to the strategic plan. The key policy issues to consider in terms of delivery benefits, I'm on slide 6 now. The alignment to NDP, Vision 2050, alignment to government outcomes, the
legitimate, yeah, those numbers.
Enhance the national workforce to contribute to prosperity and development in the country,
and to contribute to reconciliation in the Commission Board. Then we lift the executive authority priority, which largely remains the same through the NSEP period. Priority one, to ensure DMP has an independent budget process system. Priority two, provision of immediate social relief of distress to the most vulnerable military veterans. Three, to provide comprehensive support service to military veterans and where applicable to their dependents, including the benefits that are listed there. Priority four, promote empowerment programs for and of military veterans. Financial year will be characterized by initiatives that will be aggressively pursued to embrace the widening of access to economic participation for veterans, including the utilization of the preferential procurement mechanism with DMD and other social partners. We've just begun an engagement with the Office of the Central Supplier Database on that matter. Operationalization of SPV, which to provide incubator programs for veterans, facilitation of employment placement, facilitation of advice on business opportunities. Priority five, promotion of memorialization and honoring of veterans, the tomb of an unknown soldier, restoration of graves of liberation war military veterans, and establishment of the Bureau of Acre. Priority six, strengthen governance and oversight protocols to give provision of the Act. That's in particular with regard to Sun River Advisory Council and the Field Board. Priority seven, the maintenance of a credible, secure national military veterans database. And eight, the implementation of a high impact communication marketing strategy. We then look at the table on the next few slides. We're looking in more detail at the relationship of the NDP chapters, government outcomes chapters, and their contribution to the executive authority's priorities. So building a capable developmental state, strengthen delegation, accountability, and oversight. That links to government outcome 12, an efficient, effective, development-oriented public service. And in terms of our executive authority priority, that would be to ensure fully functional DMZ with an independent voice systems and processes. Then we look at the NDP chapter 13 also, building the capable state, developmental state, and also promoting accountability and fighting corruption, which relates to outcome 12 as well, and executive authority priority. Two, respecting of governance and oversight protocols to give effect to the provision of the Act. And then we look at the bodies which are to assist us in that, FANDRA, Advisory Council of the Field Force. Then chapter 6 of the NDP, integrated and inclusive rural economy, human capital, social security, and basic services. And then if we look at our executive authority priorities to provide comprehensive support services to military veterans and independence, in particular education, training, and skills development. And chapter 9 of the NDP also relates to that, and government outcome 1, basic quality education. Similarly, chapter 10 of the NDP, which promotes health, and then government outcome 2, a long and healthy life for South Africans. And our executive authority priority to provide comprehensive support services to veterans, including acquiring a healthcare and wellness center and access to health support. Chapter 3 of the NDP on economy and employment, and that comes down to priority 4, provide comprehensive support services, focus on education, training, skills development, facilitation of employment placement, and facilitation of advice on business opportunities. Chapter 6, also looking at food security, social security, and basic services, and from outside, focusing on the provision of housing. And Chapter 15 of the NDP, promoting social cohesion across society and righting the wrongs of the past.
and from outside the executive authority priority to ensure subsidization, provision of healthcare services, compensation for injury whilst in service. And then chapter 15 of the MDP, which is focusing on promoting social recognition across society, is there. Also promote empowerment programs for military veterans as R405. Further, the chapter 15, empowering military veterans to enhance their contribution to reconciliation and nation building under R405. Further, on chapter 15, the provision and promotion of heritage and memorialization and honoring of military veterans is R406. Further on chapter 15 of the MDP, as far as 7 to maintain the credibility and security of the database and the communication search and plan from the MDP. We look at the FOSSA implementation plan on the next slide. This one has a number to each one. During the medium term, the department is committed to focus on the achievement of targets with our partners, following priorities implemented and monitored by the department, ensuring that the performance agreement of the accounting officer is signed by the executive authority and from the Public Service Commission, approved, effectively implemented and monitored service delivery plan for the department, submitted to PSA, feedback on cases from the National Anti-Corruption Hotline to the Public Service Commission within a stipulated period, ensure the status of obtaining unqualified audit outcome of all matters, ensure that all financial disclosures of senior managers are concluded and filed, ensure that cases from the presidential hotline are resolved, and submit the exception reports on the 30-day payments suppliers to National Treasury. We are also challenged on the next slide, 23. The department faces a challenge to improve its management practices of in-patron participation. For 2018-19, we will look at the main issues of concerns, which are the critical importance of management and leadership, the importance of health stability and consequence management, the inability to promote corporate governance of information, communication, technology, poor management of diversity, inability to manage and finalize disciplinary cases on time, and the non-payment of suppliers within 30 days, described by Treasury regulation. Part two, when we look at the financial allocations, slide 25 is a summary per program. So for this financial year, the budget is 627 million. Taking into account the 5% cut. So administration program 1 is 127.6 million. SET is 336.8 million and ESF is 162.8 million with the amount slowly increasing to the outer year of 2020-21 where the budget goes up to 703.6 million. Then we look at the overall economic classification. So we, in the three-year SF period, we see COE increasing from 122.3 million to 141.4 million, goods and services increasing from 263 million to 293 million, transport and subsidies from 234 million to 216.9 million, and payment for capital assets from 6.9 million to 7.7 million. Then if we look in more detail, breakdown per program per economic classification. So if we look at program one, I think it's listed there, compensation of employees. In this financial year, 43.7 million, which includes
80.3 million and payment for capital assets 3.5 million to 127.5 million. Program 2, which is BESH, compensation employees 40.6 million, goods and services 62.7 million, transfers and subsidies, which are larger than benefits, 250 million, and payment for capital assets 3.3 million, giving 336.8 million. And then for program 3, which is empowerment and stakeholder management, compensation employees in the financial year 58 million, goods and services 120 million, transfers and subsidies 4 million, and payment for capital assets 0. Then if we look at the core performance information, starting with the estimate of national expenditure, if we look at the target, number of military, on slide 33 now, number of military veterans have access to healthcare facilities, our target is 17,000 for this year, which up from our performance in the last financial year by 2,000. Number of houses is listed as 1,000, which has remained consistent. It remains consistent going forward. Number of bursaries provided to veterans and their dependents, we're looking at 10,700 this year. Number of memorial sites, 3 for this year. If we look at the program budget structure, the location of the different benefits is outlined there in each of the three programs and then the sub-programs. Then the performance, more detail on the performance information. We're trying to achieve 50% of women representation in the FNF. Percentage of approved communications strategies implemented 100%, the hotline cases 100% be resolved, the integrated benefits management system, we are looking, as I said, at its implementation now and then the improvements of it. Number of invoices paid within 30 days is set as a target of 90%. Number of liberation solo research outputs is set at 5%, and percentage representation of persons with disabilities is 2%, so achieving. PPI 201, which is in place, veterans, I've spoken about healthcare, houses, those who are captured on the database, 95% of the target. And the first three that we mentioned, then targets in DSM. We are looking at four MOUs with the department. I must say our immediate focus is on the provinces in that regard. We have some progress in Mpumalanga and Eastern Cape. We've met with the Northwest, and we're looking at moving our team in that regard as well. Number of those provided with funding for skills programs, 5,000 is the target. Number of businesses with empowerment opportunities, 110. Burial care paid within 30 days of receipt, we were targeting 100%. And number of memorial sites, 53. And then the decisions that we're requesting the department, the committee to take, is to take cognizance and support the APP in the budget debate, taking note that it's aligned with the objective policy outcomes, the NTSS outcomes of government, NDP, possibility. Thank you very much. I think this is an honorable member, this is a grand plan. In terms of the framework, the targets that you seek to achieve. But what I
I want to suggest that we must go back to our dashboard approach again, because in the past meetings we took a decision that it shouldn't take long before the quarterly reports are presented to us. Now, the researchers must do that, the quarterly dashboard, so then when the department comes, we should be very, very focused. We must be focused on this, so we should not be so wide and so on its own, right? I think that should be our approach, unless if there are any points of clarity that members would want to get from that point. Any point for them to look up?
No, yes, okay. I'm sorry, he's telling me.
Hello?
He's overtaking.
Well,
no, he's giving me.
I have a question.
No, no, I think that we need information, because as we're going for this debate, it will be very much important that we get this information. For instance, on the slide, the second from the last page, you are saying you are going to set a target of 110 veterans businesses provided with access to empowerment opportunities. And you also had that target in 1780. And I'm not sure in your quarterly report did you get that information. Maybe I missed it. So I think, Chair, we need to have those that information, because it is going to assist us when we because seemingly there are so many achievements that are not highlighted. So, and the challenges are more highlighted. So, for me, it's not fair. So we need to gather that information. At the same time, I'm very concerned about this housing, houses, that you target on housing. I think we need to change that. It's not fair to yourselves, because you have raised a problem, a challenge in the Department of Human Settlement. Now you still have no alternative. Program that you are going to undertake, but you are still thinking of it. So for me, it is very much unfair to yourselves as a department, because you are targeting, and then at the end of the day, towards the end of the year, you are going to be seen as failure. So I'm not sure, Chairperson. Then the other concerns I had is the issue on the ICT systems. You had a problem on the database. And in one meeting, Chairperson, maybe in the meeting that I was not attending, it was clarified. There was a challenge with the NKSD, what is it? But there was a challenge of not giving you the proper database. Has that been solved up to this far? And the other issue is the issue of the the issue of the research outputs on the liberation struggle of history. So is it possible that you get the copy of the previous outputs produced so that we can also be able to to contact what your target. And then the issue of the consultants, you are increasing your budget for consultants. Why? Can you give us the indication why are you increasing that budget? As well as the increase on your infrastructure. Yet, maybe I misunderstood the CFO, but you were saying you have requested a rollover of 16.1 million because you cannot exceed that since you have no project. So I wanted to check now, but you have decided to also to increase your budget for 2018. And then the litigation. What litigation are you expecting for this coming year? Because you've decided to increase. And I think, Ted, we also need to get the number of litigations that are before you currently, and how far are you to in resolving those litigations. For now, Chair, I think I can just stop there. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, I think the broad strokes are basically we are concerned about huge increases in certain sub-programs. And of course we have no detail to it or sub-notes exactly. So there's an explanation that you probably have to receive in writing about these huge increases and also the huge reductions in certain programs, putting the program at risk unless it is mitigated and we understand fully. That's the broad strokes. I want to come to the issue of, if we go back to, for instance, page 21 of the APP, that's the actual document, the book. In the APP, if one reads on page 21, it says that is part of the COSAT priorities, and it says here also, if one reads, the critical importance of management leadership, it goes to accountability, consequence, etc. And of course we read there, on the other side, this on the MPAT tool, and we know the MPAT tool is now positioned as 3, and when in 2012 it is at 1. We wanted the actual printout on the progress made in terms of the strategic leadership, the accountability and governance and those issues. We asked for that specifically. So to justify where are we going, to get actually reach 3? Is it possible under the circumstances when vacancy rates are still at 26, critical posts are not being performed, the actual policies and structures that are supposed to be in place are not in place, can you actually achieve it in terms of the impact? So I think it is unrealistic, the 3, unless something happens drastically in that department to make those fundamental changes. It says also one of the points raised, if one look at the second column under FOSAT, reduction in the time it takes to fill a vacancy. Now we're sitting now at 133, went down to 125, at 116. The number of people occupying posts compared to 169, and that is being now persisting for the last 5 years. So is it really realistic to put a target where your performance will be judged according to competent staff and qualified staff to run the operations? I want to move on to the next one, which is page 23, which is the geographical distribution. Again, here we find the issue of on 23, the number reflected is 76,433. And if one looks at the other page, which speaks about the same distribution, it is said the total is only 73,433, unless that's a mistake that's made. Okay, I can go to that page. It's thinking while I'm while I'm talking. I'll give it to you. It's on page 18. On the first, in the first paragraph, the last of the first paragraph, 73,433, And then just on 23, you find 76,433, which is the discrepancy of 3,000. Unless the calculation is not correct, or something, just a printing error or something. So if one looks also on page 22, the issue that I have a worry about is the internal audit, the mention and the importance of that for the MFAT tool to be successful. You need to have strong internal controls and internal audit. And how is that capacitated at this moment? Is it in a position to really boost the department and to assure compliance and that things are done correctly and accurately and reported accordingly? The internal unit, and it's also been reduced the budget. And I'm worried what is actually happening with the internal audit. Has that improved tremendously? How many people are employed? Can we get an idea? Because that will speak to the impact results that we have. I want to move on to page 25, which is the SWOT analysis. The SWOT analysis, we look at the strengths. One of the strengths, I'm just bringing to attention, is the issue of advanced technological services. And I think my honorable colleague, Gambuza, has also mentioned about the ICT. And of course, CETA and whoever's involved in that, how far has that integrated system, and also not only the integrated system, but the actual system that is used by DNB to run its entire administration, how has that improved? What progress has been made in that regard? Also, the flexibility of staff. I don't understand flexibility, because staff has been a huge risk for the last few years, and we say that is one of our strengths under the SWOT analysis. We say that information of the DMV to the public is also one of its strengths. I've just finished a tour of four of the cities to meet with all the military veterans over this weekend. So I've been busy since Friday. I only turned last night meeting military veterans and asking, have you been informed? Is information related to you? How do you get information? Are there radio programs? Are there newsletters going out? How do they contact you? And I want to know, if we say that is a strength, then we need to justify. And Honorable Momsi is not here, the member official that's responsible for that. But we'd like to have a report, and I think I don't want to put the director on the spot, because the director's new. And the person responsible for driving the program is the chief director, Honorable Momsi. So we'd like to have some more details to that program, and exactly it's being pushed now. We said 75% in the last... in the last term or financial year. In this year, we're speaking about 100% performance. So I'd like to know, and that budget has increased tremendously, the communications budget and the advertising budget. So advertising, communications budget has definitely increased, if that speaks to that particular particular unit. Okay, so that is on the issue of the SWOT analysis, where we speak about strengths. And also we speak about department policies developed and approved on time. Certainly, we're still waiting on policies like the military pension. Is that already finalized? The policy on transport, which we said is absolutely necessary to be done as soon as possible to give access for people to reach jobs, to go seek jobs, to be able to seek help, because they live in all different areas, and if they don't have transport, they can actually not reach the state hospitals or the day clinics or the military hospitals. So the policy, particularly on transport, we insisted that it must be completed as soon as possible. We speak of policies delivered on time. I've got a question about that. We move on to page 28, which is the risk. Page 28 on the risk, if we look at all the risks, of course we know that the mitigation. If we look at the issue of the, for instance, on page 29, the database, there's no mitigation strategies put in place. That's an empty space, and that is the most important one. That we know there's a process underway. We know there's an integration database system that's been reviewed, that's been implemented. We'd like to know exactly what is the status of that, because it will be implemented, and it will only be launched in July, which means it must still go through the pilot phase. It must still have all the what we call troubleshooting or problems that will arise in the system. Or has that been done already? And it's only planned that the database will be finalized in 1920 financial year, 2019-2020. So at this stage, we're looking at 95% verification. Is that true? Is the database, the system may be set up, but has the military veterans database been verified? We ask for a forensic audit and want to know if 95% The database has increased from 55, sitting now at, as we said, 76,433. So 95% of that. Of course, I'm not going to spare the issue raised about, for instance, departmental risk. I'm looking for the issue. We know policies that are certainly lacking in certain respect. We know the benefit system has reached a certain level. I want to know also about the issue of the staff. Again, inadequately skilled and dependable human capital. That's the risk. Now, we said that risk had to be addressed through a skills audit. Where is the skills audit we're waiting for? And what exactly, what interventions were done to upgrade individuals that were not complying to the job description and what need to be done in that portfolio? That was a very urgent matter to improve the performance of this department. So it is still there, it didn't change, and the risks go on, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 risks, and of course, the department need to respond to that. Can it continue year in and year out? If people are not competent, they must be removed. If people can do a job and they can improve, certainly we must support that. But we cannot put the military veterans' benefits at risk simply because an official has been appointed that's incompetent and is not qualified for the job. That was bad recruitment, and we need to address it urgently. It's a responsibility of this department to undertake that and to have the will to execute it. We cannot have just jobs for people and they can't do a job. We move on to page 33. Page 33, I'm looking at the personnel, which I said I would refer to in this document. If one looks on page 33, the first two columns, Honorable Chair, it speaks to the allocation that has been approved by DPS, of course, Department of the, what you call the services, public services, right, DPSA. Right, 169. Of that, we've got 109 additional posts. Right? And if we go down, we see that how it is distributed. 102 in Program 1, 21 in Program 2, and 46 in Program 3. The additional posts added to each of those programs is 55, 48, and 6, which gives you a total, if one looks at the total, is 278 posts. However, the 169, according to this, if we look at 218.19, it's only at 116. 116. Which means that's 43, you minus 43 from 278, and then we get the others, which is 235 posts. So there are 2,235 people in that department. And if we look at how they are distributed, I'm saying that if it is the first program where they require 102 in administration, they only got 47. If you look at the program 2, they got 21, which is now officially allocated, and you got 26 that's already appointed. So there's an over-appointment in program 2. If we look at the one at 46, which is in program 3, which has the highest vacancy rate of 30%. If we look at 30%, yeah. At 43 and there's 46, there's only a shortage of 3 people. So unless I misunderstand the statistics that's in front of me, but there seems to be lots of inconsistency. The largest portion of additional people coming in, of course, we know, goes to the administration, program 1. So these numbers, as I say, reflect in different parts of, in the report where we speak about 116, 125, now the fourth quarter of the report, we speak about 133, that is out of the 169 appointed. What is the actual figure? I know that the Honorable DJ, Acting DJ has indicated to us that some people have been appointed just recently, the posts have been advertised. Does it deal with this vacancy rate of 26% and can we eliminate it as soon as possible? I do know there was a turnover in the department and that some people have left and that creates, of course, again a problem to re-advertise and to recruit people. Honorable Chair, I will continue. That is on the issue of the personnel, which I've got to, they need to clear up that act so we can have clarity on it. I want to go to page 46 and 47. Page 46 and 47 specifically, deals with the issue. One, I want to say strategic planning policy. There's the aspect also of the continuous research processes and strategy development, strategic forecast, etc. I'd like to have an input on the money that has been allocated in that particular sub-program. What is actually happening there, and what is the outputs in that regard? And then, of course, we start with the issue of the impact as indicated on 47, and then we run through all the different indicators that are there. Now, the indicator also on the fully integrated benefit management system, we know the it will only be implemented now in July, and one cannot say that you have continuous improvement. Continuous improvement can go beyond 100%. Continuous improvement needs to be given some indicator that one can actually measure. It must be SMART objectives, that's how we are taught, so that you can measure and say that I've made progress or I didn't make progress. So those things are not acceptable, continuous improvements. We'd like to have the outline also. I think it's time that we know exactly how many cases are being dealt with. We know now that the PLO is gone and there's been a problem in a certain area. But we want to know, what is the issue here? How many cases are actually being dealt with by the presidential hotline? The other one is the communication strategy. As we say, it's 100%. And we'd like to know, what is the actual plan going ahead? It's a high-impact marketing strategy that's going in there. So the department needs to clarify for us that. The issue of the liberation struggle history research outputs of 5, we'd like to have an idea of what it exactly entails. And are we dealing with the actual military veterans that were connected somehow to some events? Are we dealing with universities that are giving academic support to make the papers, you know, academically researched and reliable and accurate information that's been reported in those properly research outputs? So we'd like to know, what is the actual plan of doing the research and what has been targeted for research? The issue of disability, I think our colleagues are here, and that we insist that people should be employed, that are capable. They are disabled, but they are capable of doing a job. We have a number of them in the government administrations, and I would like to know also report on that, how many people have now been employed in this department in that regard. The issue, of course, we can continue, Honorable Chair. Yeah. I want to just come to the other cases here quickly. The issue of the housing, I think that was addressed by Honorable Dadabuza. It is a problem. Is this now just simply putting down a figure to park some money, which means I can expect by the adjustment budget when it comes to November that we have to approve it, that automatically that money will be shifted to education? Is that how the planning is done? Or is there a real effort to ensure that housing is actually delivered? I mean, if we look over the MTF period, 3,000 houses, 264 million. And education, of course, we can see is going to take up the bulk in the MTF period. Education and skills training. However, skills has also been neglected. I've just spoken to some of the military vets. They say they went to certain centers to apply and they send it into the department to be able to driving lessons. That has been stopped. They were not supported. They have to wait now. And I believe that SOP is now done. And when will it be implemented or effected? And when will that notice actually go out to military vets to unskill themselves and upskill themselves to be able to find a job? Because even with military veterans' benefits, there are huge obstacles of people still waiting for registration. People that have put in applications that were approved and received notices, payments to schools that were not done. So where is the hitch in the system? If they go online, they see they've been accepted or it's been approved, but no money's been delivered to the schools where it's supposed to go. Or to, I don't know, NSFS doesn't do, they doesn't do, they do this, they only do higher education. So it has to be directly to the institution. So we have those issues that arise. The issue also of the skills development. We know that we achieved only last year. We look at a figure of 1,908 out of 4,000 chairs. We're putting a target of 5,000. Are all the systems in place and processes now to be able to grant that to 5,000 people that they will actually go for those courses? Because the numbers increased, but the target of the last target of the last year was underachieved by over 50%. So I'd like to know what progress is made in that regard. burial support, as I asked earlier, we'd like to know the numbers, how many people actually receive burial support. And of course, we do know there's a discrepancy or in dealing with different military vets, where certain military vets get the basic 25,000 and others will get the 100,000 because of all the transport, events, and all things surrounding that individual. We need to have clear criteria where certain people are allowed to get some additional support assistance and others only get the basic burial support of 25,000. Because this causes a lot of dissatisfaction and is considered discrimination unless the policy is clear about the matter. The policy is not. The issue we have, Honourable Chair, is also the memorial site. Again, it is noted in this APP where we're saying that we want three. But last year we're supposed to achieve two, and the last report of the fourth quarter said we achieved none. So it's again reported, possibly, of course, the reports and things go in before the time. But the anticipation by the department, knowing the circumstances, would have known that it was achievable or not achievable. When you're by the fourth quarter, and before you give in actually the fourth quarter, of course, January to March, this was submitted, the APP was submitted before then. What was the position of those two memorial sites that to be erected? What happened there? So that the decision that is made that three will be done next year, and two was actually not achieved in the previous year, which is at zero. So I don't know how this planning actually works, but it's not helping our acting DG with this arrangement. The healthcare the same, I see the numbers increase in terms of access, which means you get a card or you're on the system where you're allowed to go access. But how many people actually benefit from the system? Still we have letters of authorization. People can't just go, they still have to be authorized. And there's many treatments that they have to do where they still have to find authorization. The medical files of these individuals are at the hospitals. Life is just made very difficult for people when they're actually in need. When people have sacrificed their life for this country and then they find those problems with even finding the treatment at the hospital which they actually deserve. So in fact, I see the numbers increase, but it does not speak to the actual people benefiting from the system. So that is another issue. The issue then I want to continue is the number of bursaries. As we can see, the bursaries has escalated to 10,700 for this year. 10,700 is a huge increase from where we started way back. In 3 years, gone up to 4,700, now 10,000, and then the numbers, the targets were exceeded by far, and that will be the case. I believe it is a very good investment. It is breaking the cycle of poverty. I believe those things can work, but somehow we need to balance it, and we also need to look at people that are not abusing the system, that they are using the most expensive private schools at the expense of other military veterans. What I do know is that when you tell people they've got 20,000 available for this from this department, they will inflate everything. Uniform, stationery, you get uniforms worth 10,000. I mean, where do I go shop? In London. So how does the department deal with those issues? And do you actually find quotations of the suppliers of these uniforms to all the different schools that is actually attached? Do you actually find quotations for the stationery for the application that has been made? I mean, people speak about 5,000 for stationery. Okay, 10,000 are we going to add in a computer now? What is the criteria being set if you say 20,000? How does one actually verify this information that is actually correct? And if there's collusion or conniving, then of course money will be lost to this department at the expense of military veterans. So I'd like us to be a bit more prudent in how we do things and cautious, and that we put the systems in place that will minimize the issue of people abusing, exploiting the department for their personal benefit. I think we are not here serving here for certain people, and certainly not to exploit any situation. So we'd like to have some equity, some justice being done, and that people also understand if you're a military veteran, you must not also be selfish. If you sacrifice for your country, don't become selfish and only think about yourself. You need a far greater cause, and not to compromise your principles in that regard. The issue of the SRD, I believe that is back on track, but it's a difference. this time social welfare worker will be sent to the military veterans by the department. So these are people that have now been approved and then they sent. They can't just apply and go to their own social welfare worker. Is that the case? And there's a huge delay. And if people's situation, their means test and all other things qualify them for that, why must they wait for the department for a social welfare worker when the military base does have a social welfare worker, when government does have a social welfare, when justice department have social welfare workers? Why do we have to implement a system that makes things more complicated and deprives military veterans of a basic 1,200 rand voucher to live? And I'm speaking about genuine cases. Because some of them don't have pensions, they don't get pensions, they're under the age. They don't have a special pension because they may not be from the non-statutory forces. So people are struggling out there, and I've met with them personally, and they don't know where their food is going to come from tomorrow. And money has now been allocated, according to the budget, for the SRD. So I say, get rid of those who don't qualify, which was, of course, confirmed by our acting DG, that there are people that have abused the system. We need to get them out of the system, and those who genuinely qualify and deserve, let them be paid as soon as possible, and not to delay the process. Then, of course, we ought to create an injustice in that regard. There are lots, the others I put just broadly, Honorable Chair, about what was mentioned about business consultants, advertising, communication, and all those things that have been increased. I think the CFO has all that information at hand, and I think I believe is ready for us to actually respond why they have justified those huge increases and decreases in certain regards. And I think we are looking forward to that explanation, because in certain respects we are indeed happy that things have been decreased. But if it's decreased hugely, like the provincial offices, the accommodation, that figure has come down. We still have 6 offices officially to be put in place. So what is the cost that's being projected for the other 6 offices, provincial offices of DMV? And the figure that's been given, of course, speaks to that, and we need to find out how much does it really cost to fit out, because that has suddenly dropped. The leases have been also been dropped. So previous years, how much did this department pay for leases? Were those private properties or government properties? Because the figures have come down tremendously on leases. Why? What happened previously? Where was the money spent? If it's a private property, you'd like to know who's the owner of the property. So I'd like to know those type of things which I have a concern about, where things are dropped, so I mean, comes down the, and we say we're still going to accommodate. So the one, of course, the heritage, we see this, if we look at the number being paid, actually of people being paid for doing work, it's a 38 million the compensation. How many people have been employed in the program 3? And there's a 30% vacancy rate in that particular department. So we'd like to have the breakdown of the additional staff, which is sitting, as I say, there's a discrepancy of 79, and it goes right up to 109, the other one comes down to 75 or 74. How many are interns? How many are casual labor? How many are seconded from DOD? The breakdown we asked for, because it does not speak to each other. The last time we interrogated, it was standing at 240. So we would like to have some more details on that. Honorable Chair, there's lots of detailed questions on the specific items, but regarding the CFO, the budget itself, as I said, those were the broad ones, unless I speak to each one of them. But I think the CFO is prepared, is ready listed. If not, I will then raise the ones that have been listed. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bissau. I'm going to suggest this to you, the concern, because now this is your annual performance plan, you still have to implement it. But there are concerns that overall those concerns. We must take them into this consideration. There is also concerns maybe about the about how to correct your plan in terms of print or numbers. That you must attend to. they are also concerned about systems and criteria. Now, I'm going to suggest that the concerns that were raised by members, which are going to have an impact going forward on your annual performance plan for this financial year, they should be put also on the our dashboard, so that when you come and give us your quarterly reports, you must start by attending to those concerns which were raised. Unless if there is a question that needs a question of clarity now, that needs an immediate answer. If you've got anything to clarify, you can do that. Otherwise, I suggest that is the approach that we should take, because I think the concerns raised by members here are very helpful. They are going to be very helpful to you too, as management. DG, anything that is, you think is immediate?
No, Chair, I think your process is really going to help us if we can have the dashboard and then know what we need to report on at what time. I think we can then come up with the detail and the engagement in those times.
Yeah, we would not say we want written answers now. We want to see them factored in your quarterly report. You see? Because if they are in the framework of your annual performance plan, they must just be factored when you come here. But the dashboard that the researchers are going to prepare, you must make them available to all members, so that when members come here in the next meeting, we call you to give us your quarterly report for this financial year. We start there. Will that be in order, honorable members?
Thank you, Chair. I think it will be, but I still want to emphasize the issue of giving us this information on this the previous year achievements, because here you have put a lot in percentages, but we need, when we debate, we need tangible issues to say, if you are saying you have achieved 95% of the military veterans who are verified and captured, you need to say so, and then you need also put it in a geographical area, and as well as to say what are the challenges you had experienced whilst you were doing that process. So it is very critical. They should go back and look at what they have written here, provided to us, and then respond before, I think next week we need to get some of those, and then we can get them regularly until the time of our debate. Because it is critical, Chair. If they don't give us that information, there's nothing to debate. So, and also there are other cases on this current 2018-19 APP that also needs to be clarified, so that when you put a point, you must be able to quantify it or qualify it. So it's really justified. Why are they doing this and this and that? Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I just want to support Honorable Mahusa, because otherwise it's a tick box exercise. A percentage means nothing in terms of your targets if it hadn't been something substantial services to military veterans. It means nothing. And I've said it in the past. I'm not I mean, this percentages, everybody records on percentages. That, I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in what changes have been made and what, how has that contributed to the, to our objectives with, in this case, our military veterans. If you have got a 95% target reached, but you hear what Honourable ESO has now raised in terms of, and I know how many people approach us on a daily basis, military vets, then you see 95% sounds very nice, so you can pat yourself on the back. While meantime, back at the ranch, nothing has changed. And if that is the purpose of the target settings and the percentages, then in my opinion, leave that out. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in what actually changed, what change has been brought about for military veterans. Thank you.
Which means I can did you?
Look, Chair, I think we all support the issue of what changes for military veterans. The actual detail of the target and how the percentages are derived are in an extra B on page 68 for each target. It gives the baseline, it gives what the...
It's still there, we haven't seen it.
Okay, well, it deals with the... what the numerator is, the denominator, and how the percentage is compiled. So these are processes that we've gone through with Treasury and DPME and the Auditor General, who have said to us, this is the way we should do the actual measurement. So I think what you're requesting is all...
It's supposed to us.
Not for you.
Existing in this book.
Book,
page
68.
Yeah.
So,
and if there are other details
you
can give
us, but that's not... Chair, I got this document now, but I'm very fast. My eyes are very quick. I don't dispute what is here. I would like the department to assist us, Chair, when we are debating. The debate is very, very crucial. More than anything, you can give us your setup with the National Treasury. It doesn't help us. We will be speaking to the nation then. People will be listening to us. What I would say, I said sometimes it's good for us. But when we are projecting what is in here to the nation, you need to help us. Nobody else is going to assist us, Chairperson. Other than the department, our department.
Now, Honorable
Dambuzo. Yes, sir.
The page that the department is talking about, that is not addressing your question of warm bodies. I would understand that here.
The issue from page 68 is, I was responding to the Honorable Marais. The issue that he was raising is how do we calculate these issues. The point that Honorable Dambuzo is raising, we know that we will give us that information. But the issue is
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
The department has
now, I think we have come to the end of our meeting, but what I want to say to you on my part that you need to be very strict on non-payment, on the 30 days non-payment, because you see, if you leave that kind of behavior to continue, it's going to breed corruption, also inefficiency in your systems. You must be able, when you report here, why did you not pay people within a period of 30 days? Was it because of some lazy official, some corrupt official, or systems inefficiency? Those are the things that you should attend to. The other thing you need to explain to us, or you, when we meet again, about the access to health care. How did you reach the 17,000 did you record those who got chronic diseases, and then after that, substack, something like that, you see? Because I just imagine you can say that you are going to give health care to 17,000 military veterans, and then we have 20,000 military veterans in, you see? So those are the technicalities that you should look into when you do your targets. And you just check your own management level, just check your SWOT analysis. I would recommend when you do such SWOT analysis, when you talk of weaknesses, we also always talk about the internal weaknesses. Right? I see that your internal, your weaknesses are well defined, but when you go to the strength, I see some sort of a mixture of external being mixed with internal. So you need to check those technicalities so that when you report to this committee, you should be clear as to what you're reporting about. And I think, honorable members, on that note, our meeting will adjourn until we meet you in the next meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The CFO got away, Jeff. The CFO got away.
Remember when you were sitting in the box and you were carrying another one? Now, here you see it again.
Hello, how are you?
She doesn't want to play today.